So to kick it off with a bit of context of how the public perceives the health impacts of climate change, we are honored to have Connie Roser Renoff from the George Mason University Center for Climate Change Communication, which is located in Northern Virginia. Connie is an associate research professor at the center, and her research focuses on understanding how diverse audiences use, interpret, and respond to information on the issue of climate change. The objective of her work is to identify effective communication strategies that inform and engage the public while contributing to the theoretical literature on science communication, risk communication, and social marketing. So Connie, I'll let you take it away.
Thanks, Victoria. Can you hear me okay? Do I sound all right?
You sound good.
Great. Okay. I'm going to talk to you today about the American public's understanding of the impacts of climate change on human health, and specifically people's understanding of its impacts on heat-related illnesses. And if I were to give this talk a subtitle, it would be, "They Don't Know Much." Americans are more inclined to think about climate change as affecting polar bears than people, particularly people in the U.S. And I want to start this talk by reminding all of us of a basic principle of effective communication. If we focus solely on what we believe it's important for the audience to know, we're more likely to fail in our communication efforts. Effective communication has to begin with the audience, with understanding the audience, their interests, their informational needs, their values, what sources of information they trust. And that kind of information, that understanding, helps us frame messages, target our audiences appropriately, choose appropriate message content and sources, and provide people with information they need in a form that they're more likely to accept. I'm going to try to help you with that by talking about some audience research. We at George Mason have been collaborating with folks at Yale on the Climate Change in the American Mind research program since 2008. We've been tracking Americans' climate change-related beliefs, values, and behaviors in biannual surveys, and we've segmented the American public into six audience segments that I'll talk about later. Last fall, our survey focused on Americans' understanding of the health threats associated with climate change, and it's mostly data from that survey that I'll be presenting to you today. Most Americans say they've thought about how global warming might affect people's health not much or not at all. That's 60% of the public, and only 10% say they've given it a lot of thought. And these figures are probably overestimates given people's general unwillingness to tell survey researchers that they've given no thought to a topic that the researchers obviously care a lot about. But Americans are ready to accept information on the health effects of climate change. When asked, they're inclined to think the effects will be negative. We ask them to rate how good or bad global warming will be for people's health, and you can see here that close to two-thirds said it will be bad. Almost a third said they believe that the health of Americans is being harmed now by global warming, and 40% said Americans will be harmed over the coming decade. 17% said the health of people in their own household is being harmed, and over a quarter said it will be harmed. And on its own health, the numbers are comparable to what you see for health care of others in my household. We asked people in a close-ended question. We gave them a list here of all these health threats, most of which are associated with climate change, whether they expect these health threats to increase over the coming decade or not, if nothing is done to address global warming. And you can see here that between 20 and 40% of the respondents said all these health problems will become more common if nothing's done to address global warming. Over a third said they anticipate increases in the number of heat strokes. But many also said they anticipate increases in health problems that are unrelated to climate change. Here you can see almost 30% said flu is going to increase due to climate change. 22% said infections with Ebola will increase, and neither of those have been linked in the literature to climate change. That's a clue that that accurate knowledge is lacking. A more accurate picture emerges from an open-ended question. That is, we asked people before they saw the list that you just saw on the prior slides, before they saw that, we asked them, in your view, what health problems related to global warming are Americans experiencing, if any? And the answers here then reflect what they could come up with unprompted. So these answers represent their deeper understanding of the health threat. Over half, that's 57%, either left the question blank or wrote that they didn't know. Only one in four was able to correctly name a climate-related health problem. 4% said something about heat or cold, temperature impacts. So I found that very surprising, given that most of the American public thinks of this issue as global warming rather than climate change. I would have expected that more people would understand that heat health would be impacted than what we see here. We also asked them if some groups or types of people were more vulnerable to climate-related health problems, and if so, who these people were. Two-thirds either gave no answer or they said no one is more vulnerable than anyone else. But I'm sure that all of you listening to this webinar today are well aware that heat-related illnesses are more likely to affect some populations than others. This low understanding has implications for both personal preparedness and for willingness to support societal preparedness. People who lack understanding of the threat are less likely to protect themselves or to support government action that would help to protect them. So these are results of a regression analysis. The numbers you see are standardized regression coefficients, and they vary from 0 to 1, with higher numbers indicating stronger relationships between the two variables linked with arrows. And what we see here is that knowing the health impacts of climate change and knowing the vulnerable groups, that is, the responses to the open-ended questions, that's the strongest predictor of taking appropriate actions during extreme heat, staying in cool spaces and staying hydrated and things like that. Believing that global warming is harming other nations and that it's likely to harm one's own community, those are also significant predictors of adaptive behavior. Support for government action to protect people from the health impacts of climate change, elected officials like Obama, the Congress, government agencies, that's also strongly predicted by knowledge and by perceptions of the severity and likelihood of harm, both here in my own community, in the U.S., and in other nations. And finally, support for increasing funding to the public health agencies at the federal, state, and local levels, most strongly predicted by support for government agents. Action, that's not surprising, but indirectly what that means is that all four of the variables on the left increase support for funding by increasing the support for the desire for a government response. And then severity and probability of harm, where you see the direct arrows, have direct effects above and beyond their indirect effect through support. So the conclusion here is that knowledge matters. If we increase people's understanding of the threats that we all face, they'll be more likely to protect themselves and to support government actions that will protect them. Now let's look at health perceptions among global warming six Americas. In 2008, we segmented the American public into six groups that share common global warming beliefs, values, and behaviors, and we've been tracking those groups ever since. Generally, the groups on the left have the highest belief in global warming. They're the most concerned, the most motivated to take action. The groups on the right have the lowest belief in global warming. The dismissive in particular are inclined to believe that it's a scientific hoax. And the groups in the middle are inclined to think that global warming is real, but they don't think it has any personal relevance and they don't have strong opinions on the topic one way or another. An easy way to understand the differences among the segments is that understanding and concern decrease directly as you move from the left to the right, and that personal involvement with the issue falls something like a U-shape, with the middle segments, and particularly the disengaged, giving the issue no thought. I'll show you just a couple of figures that illustrate these patterns. Virtually all of the alarmed are certain that global warming is happening, while virtually none of the dismissive are. Same pattern here for understanding that humans are causing global warming. 90% of the alarmed get it, 6% of the dismissive do. In terms of the harm that global warming is causing, you can see that over three-quarters of the alarmed say people in the U.S. are being harmed now by global warming, but close to 90% of the dismissive say people will never be harmed. Here's the second pattern. You can see that the middle segments say they haven't given the issue much thought, and that translates into attitudinal uncertainty, which you can see on the right, where people in those middle segments are more likely to agree, I could easily change my mind about global warming. What that means about the middle segments is that it's hard to get their attention. It's pretty easy to change their minds on the issue because they're so uncertain, but it's hard to make that change stick. They forget about it because they don't think about it and aren't interested. And then when they come across another message on the issue, say from a climate skeptic, they're likely to change their minds again. And that highlights the importance of message repetition. You know, Victoria said at the beginning, simple messages repeated often through a variety of trusted sources. And this shows you why. Those middle groups need many repetitions of the message before it's going to stick with them. Let's look at barriers to communicating on the issue more generally. There are barriers to talking to all six groups about the issue. Three-quarters of the disengaged say they have trouble understanding news about global warming. But notice that even among the alarmed, close to a quarter agree with that statement. Majorities of the disengaged, doubtful, and dismissive say they don't want to hear anything about it. And majorities of every single segment believe that news reporting on the issue is biased. Let's look specifically at health perceptions among the segments. Recall earlier that I showed you a slide showing that a majority of Americans think global warming is bad for the health of people in the U.S., but it's only among the alarmed that a majority thinks the effects will be very bad. That is, they rated it -3. You can see 75% of the alarmed said it will be very bad, half of the concerned did, and 15% or fewer of the other segments said it will be very bad. In the closed-ended measures, where we gave them the list of health threats and said, do you think this will become more or less common over the coming decade, close to 70% of the alarmed said heat strokes will increase, and 60% of the concerned. But in the open-ended question, less than 10% of the alarmed mentioned heat-related illnesses. You can see there 7%, 4% of the concerned, and 1% of the remaining four segments. On the economic and demographic characteristics associated with vulnerability, the other open-ended question, we see that less than a quarter of any segment recognize that certain groups are more vulnerable than others to the effects of climate change. So while accurate understanding of health impacts is highest among the alarmed and the concerned, so is inaccuracy. So you can see that 60% of the alarmed were able to accurately name a health problem associated with climate change, but 16% of them also gave an inaccurate response. Lots of people continue to confuse the ozone hole with climate change, and their fears about other health threats, like Ebola, for example, get linked to climate change in their minds if they're already worrying about the subject of climate change. So there's lots of room here for clarification and education among all the segments, including among the alarmed and concerned. and they're the ones who are most likely to be receptive to this information. One of the very best things you can do is to get them to talk to their friends and family about what they know, because we know from a century of research on public opinion that interpersonal communication is much more effective than mediated communication in reaching people and changing their minds. But since you can't rely solely on interpersonal communication, let's look at sources. Now, trust in information sources on the health problems related to global warming varies widely by segment. We asked about over a dozen different sources, and I'm just showing you a few of them here. As you can see, the wide polarization here that climate scientists, for example, are trusted by 72% of the alarmed, 7% of the dismissive. CDC by 68% of the alarmed, 8% of the dismissive. But then look at primary care doctors there in the middle. You see less polarization for primary care doctors than you do for any other source of mediated source that we talked about, or other than friends and family. So while you can look at your CDC and your local public health department, you see the polarization, but trust in a known health professional is less polarized. What you've got there is interpersonal communication with someone who's trusted on health. And that, you know, I don't have data on this, but my guess thinking about this is that public health professionals at health departments, when they're interacting interpersonally, are going to have comparable influence to primary care doctors. So it puts you in a pretty good position for talking to the public. Now let's talk about the actual content of a health framing of climate change. We have a couple of experiments here that I want to describe to you that show that framing climate change can be effective in reaching across the segments, even to the dismissive. These two experiments use similar methodology. Let me just describe it to you here quickly. The respondents read a four-paragraph essay, and this one, the introduction frames it as a health problem. Global warming is a threat to people's health. Our health will suffer if we don't take action. That's the threat statement in the second paragraph. The third paragraph goes on to talk about the benefits to people's health if we take action on climate change, and then the conclusion just repeats the framing of it as health. The way respondents worked with this essay is that they highlighted in pink the sentences that they liked and in green the sentences that they didn't like. And when you look then here across the segments, at the responses, their average number of positive and negative sentences, you can see that for the disengaged through the alarm, the response to all four paragraphs was positive. For the disengaged and, I'm sorry, for the dismissive and for the doubtful, the opening paragraph and the threat paragraph evoked mostly negative responses. But then when you got to benefits, the benefits of taking action to protect people's health from climate change, they respond positively. And there at the conclusion, they're ending up at a pretty neutral place, which for the dismissive are so hard to reach, that's really quite a promising outcome that they didn't hate us at the end. And we can contrast that with health framing in three different kinds of essays, a health essay, a natural security essay, and an environmental essay, that the health essay evoked hopeful responses from the cautious, disengaged, and dismissive to a larger extent than either of the other kind, whereas the national security essay, which we expected to appeal to the dismissive, made them very angry. It backfired. Health works better than national security. So the conclusions here, that Americans' understanding of the health impacts of climate change, including the effects on heat-related illness, is very shallow, that even the most concerned Americans, the alarmed, show little understanding of the health effects of climate change. People who understand the health impacts of global warming are more likely to be taking action to protect themselves during extreme heat, and they're more likely to support action by elected officials and public health agencies to protect the public. Medical professionals are well positioned to increase people's understanding of the health effects of global warming, and framing global warming as a public health issue is likely to engage segments of the public that are skeptical about climate change or disengaged from the issue. I want to thank our collaborators at Yale and the other people at George Mason, and also the funders who pay for these very expensive surveys that we do. Thank you.
Thank you, Connie. That was a really great presentation. I think it helps to, and some fabulous research. I think it really is great to have that research because it helps, I think it helps illustrate the need for collaboration even more, which is the point of this webcast, is to promote collaboration. It also shows great guidance. I think it helps us give some guidance for crafting our messages, making them simple and positive, as you mentioned, hopeful. But it's obvious that we all have a lot of work to do, particularly with those middle groups. But knowing that the primary care doctors are a key trusted resource, I think that's really great information for especially the environmental professionals who may not really think about that. And so hopefully, since we're in heat wave season around most of the country, folks can take this information and start crafting some messages to help leverage basically the heat wave season. So thanks again, Connie. Before we go on to the next speaker, just a quick reminder to send your questions in throughout in the question pane on the right, and try to direct your question to a specific presenter or presenters. We have another poll question before we go on to the next presenter. And so I'm going to read that, and then you'll have a chance to answer. The question is, what do you see as the greatest barrier to action on climate change-related health impacts? Is it that there's a lack of public attention or interest in the issue? There's a lack of belief in human-caused climate change? A lack of knowledge that climate change causes health problems? A lack of understanding of the likelihood or severity of those health impacts? And a lack of understanding of the vulnerability factors? Even though it might be hard to do, please just choose one. Go ahead. Okay, great. Thanks for answering. We see some interesting results. The majority of you feel that there's a lack of knowledge that climate change causes health problems, which was reinforced, I think, by Connie's presentation. The next popular one is lack of understanding of the likelihood. That relates to the uncertainty, I think, that people have around the issue, and lack of public attention. So it gives us all some motivation for our work going forward.